All right, we'll try again. Representative Dietrich, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to, first of all, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me to come this morning and to speak to the three school trust fund bills that I have. They are not before the committee, so this is an informational hearing, and they, one bill is on the calendar, and the other one is in education reform, and I'm not, and I would presume that the second one is also. So my point being is that this is informational only, and so if you don't have a preference, if you don't mind, I would like to start with House File 435. That is the more major reform bill, and so I think that if we go through that bill first, that the second and the third bill will be a little bit easier to understand the rationale why.
Representative Dietrich, that'd be fine.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I began my work on school trust lands about 3 years ago when Representative Greiling asked me to chair a school trust lands work group. As we began our research, we took a field trip up north, hosted by the DNR, to see the school trust lands and experience the school trust lands firsthand. And at that point, I had been involved in education funding for about 15 years and had not even realized that school trust lands existed. I learned a lot. And so part of this hearing, for me at least, my goal is to bring you along with some of the learning that I experienced, because I presume that some of you on the committee might not even understand school trust lands. So I have quite a few handouts for you. And if you don't mind, I would just like to, first of all, refer to this handout. This is an overview, or I call the school trust land story. I have developed this just so that other legislators can bring this out to their communities.
Representative Dietrich, members, it's the one, the cover sheet for us says flow of permanent school trust fund monies to school. Representative Dietrich referring to in a couple pages.
Okay.
Go ahead, Representative Dietrich.
So go in a couple of pages. I developed this piece of literature so that other representatives, senators, interested parties can pick this up and learn a little bit basic school trust lands 101. And I would encourage the representatives here to use this in your communities. I think the education communities especially are very intrigued by the fact that we even have the school trust lands and what is their purpose. Along with this, in your packets, you have something that looks like this, and this is a map of where we have school trust lands. The DNR referred to this in the presentation last Thursday, and as you can tell, 90% of the school trust lands in the state now are located in the northern part of Minnesota. The other piece that I would like you to look at before we get started into the bill, because it's really important that you have an understanding of it, is the flow chart. And this flow chart we developed in 2008 to help members understand a little bit more clearly how the flow of money comes off of the lands. And so if you look at the top of this flow chart, you'll see permanent school trust lands. Obviously, we have the 2.5 million in forestry lands and the 1 million mineral rights. Those lands generate money, and what they are, but at this point, the DNR then subtracts money, subtracts their expenses from the gross revenue off of the lands. That money, if you're following along, that the net money goes to the school trust fund, and that money is invested by the State Board of Investment, and that income then goes to the school districts. At one point, then, once that money went to the school districts, that money was subtracted from the general fund. And that's where you see the little scissors at the bottom. And in 2010 was the first year that we eliminated that subtraction, and the schools get that money now over and above education funding. And that has been a suggestion for many, many years around here, and so I am really pleased that we were able to accomplish that in 2010. And then in your packet, you also have the spreadsheet of how much revenue is in the school trust lands account. And I am looking for mine so I can show you what it looks like.
Representative Diedrich, it's actually the last page, I believe, in our handout. Is this the one?
No.
Oh, sorry.
Maybe that one didn't. It's just one page. Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Representative Anderson, will you hold that up once again? It looks like this. This is the history of what has been deposited into the trust fund and how much has been going to the schools. And then, of course, up until 2010, then how much has been subtracted from the general fund. So with that, just, Mr. Chairman, would you like to say something?
No, I'm good.
Okay. I thought you were trying to interrupt me.
Representative Diedrich, you are concentrating so hard. Your associate has been standing to your right the whole time wondering if it's okay for her to come forward. She's only been there for about 5 minutes, but we're glad you're so intense. Thank you. We owe you a thank you for your hard work on this behalf. Representative Diedrich, continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I have been called intense before. So,
Representative Diedrich, intensity is not a bad trait. Go ahead.
Thank you. So anyhow, I've just given you a little bit of an overview of some of the things that I have learned or School Trust Lands 101, and I want to encourage all of you to continue to talk about school trust lands in your community, with especially the education groups, the parent groups love to hear this school trust lands story, and actually I call it a romantic story. It really gives people faith in their government that that when this state was started, they had a vision for public education and for public education to continue into this state into the future. And so it is really a really heartwarming story. So anyhow, Mr. Chairman, I have continued my research and formulated some concerns, however, about the management of our school trust lands and the return on the investment to the school districts of this state. I have concluded in all of my research that the DNR should not be managing the 2.5 million acres of that the school children own in this state. And the reason why is because I believe that the DNR has an inherent conflict of interest determined by their own mission, which their mission is very noble and it is very good for what they do. They are to focus on preserving the environment and conservation. And that is perfect for what their department is, but I don't believe that it is perfect for the management of the school trust lands. So, and in fact, I am not the only so there are some things that I think that members have to know before you can start having an honest school trust lands discussion, especially in the Environment and Energy Committee. And so I would like to point out what the state auditor has pointed out in 1997 with their audit report. They point out two really important things, that school trust lands are not state lands because they are held in trust for the children of this state. And second is that they are to be managed differently than state lands. And you might have to make different decisions on school trust lands than you do on other state lands. Now, trust law supports those two things. The legislative auditor has gotten their information from looking at trust law, and the Attorney General's office has also spoke to us about those two principles and verified them. And in fact, I have a two-page article that I included for you because I think it is so important that we all come to some agreement on some common words, which actually are in the statute in regards to school trust lands. And if you look at this, I just want to point out a couple of things. First of all, is off to the left, it says the legislature, DNR, and State Board of Investment are trustees for public schools. So that means we, when we took the oath of the Constitution, when we were sworn in, we became a trustee. And we have fiduciary responsibilities to the school trust lands and to that fund. The The trust, second of all, I want to point out on that bullet point is that the trust is a real trust, and it should be governed by the same fiduciary principles that apply to the management of a private trust. Mr. Chairman?
Thank you. Representative Hansen has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dietrich, I was intrigued by something you had said, that the state, the trust lands are not state lands, and I think you were here a couple days ago when I asked the question about why is there PILT payments? Why does the general fund pay PILT payments on the trust lands if they're not state lands? Do you know the history of that, or why that's occurred, and why the trust doesn't pay for the PILT payments rather than the general fund?
Representative Dietrich.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I do not know the history on that. I know that the DNR pays $1.5 million in PILT payments to the counties for school trust lands, and I would presume that that came out of a discussion between counties and the DNR, and obviously the school trust lands cannot generate tax revenue, and the same argument that came with why PILT lands are there in the first place. I think that they have been conglomerated together. But I will say that is one more reason why we need an independent agency and someone acting on behalf of the kids to figure out should they be made and who should be made making that payment.
Thank you. Continue, Representative. Representative Dill, is that a question? Representative Dill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have all my years of dealing with this issue, whether I was in the legislature, I've never heard it said that they weren't state lands. Now, I understand that they're in a trust, but that's kind of an interesting concept that, and I'd like to have more information on that idea. It seems to me that they are state lands, but they're held in trust for the kids. And so that probably, in my, just now thinking about this whole new paradigm on this, I need more information on that, Representative Dietrich, because I'm going to what Representative Hansen is bringing up is how is that connected to the general fund and PILT if they're not state lands. That's interesting.
Okay.
Representative Dietrich, if you don't have comment, you can continue. Representative Dill, I think we probably will ask the DNR that question when Representative Dietrich is done. I feel there may be other questions for the DNR. Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the other things that I would like to point out is on the back side of that legislative auditor's report of 1998 is that the duties of a trustee, and I have three that I focus on, the duties of a trustee, which we all are, we need to demonstrate undivided loyalty to the trust and the land and to the beneficiaries. We need to furnish information to the beneficiaries, which I think has been sorely lacking in this process. And we need to keep trust property separate than other property. And I think that also speaks to the, what we were just having a discussion about on whether it's state land or not, state owned. So anyhow, I'm going to continue then with my testimony on the bill. So I have concerns about the oversight and the oversight responsibilities that we, the legislature, have been charged with as trustees of the state. We many years ago we created what we call the Permanent School Fund Advisory Committee, and that committee is supposed to advise the DNR about the management of the school trust lands. The advisory committee does a very fine job of approving land swaps and sales, but in my opinion, for the most part, they are set up for ineffectiveness. And in my opinion, lax oversight and accountability on the part of the trustees has led to minimal increases to the fund, the permanent school fund, and the money to our schools. In my research, what I have realized is that our state is not alone. So instead of just criticizing and condemning the past and present management and oversight of the school trust lands, or even worse yet, instead of continuing to allow us just to try to legislate management of the school trust lands, I am proposing bold and courageous reform in House File 435. House File 435 creates an independent, separate agency from the DNR to administer and manage the Minnesota's permanent school trust lands. This concept is closely modeled after the Utah agency that was created in the early 1900s. an independent, and their in their model, an independent agency is hires a school trust lands administrator who is accountable to a board of trustees. That board is appointed by the governor and a nominating committee who nominates the members of the board, and they are confirmed by the Senate. This model has been highly successful in the state of Utah. When the land administrator, Kevin Carter, took over the administration of the school of the Utah School Trust Lands, there was almost $100 million in the trust fund. The education community believed that the land could be managed more efficiently and effectively, more like a business, to generate more revenue while preserving the assets for the long term. And at that point, I would just like to say in your handout is Statute 127.31 or 30, I don't remember, but it's in very large print, and it is the statute that has that provides a goal for the management of our school trust lands, saying that we must maximize the revenue, yet use conservation principles. This bill does not change that. We believe very strongly that those two goals can and should work together in tandem. So, back to the Utah model, the education community was right. 10 years later, the Utah School Trust Lands Fund has tipped the $1 billion mark under this new management model. They have more acres in wildlife management areas than before they went to an independent agency. When Utah was in the last year of being managed by the DNR, they generated about $17 million to the schools. When they moved to a quasi-government status and they were required to act more like a business, their revenue went to $167 million. The same lands, just different management structure. Everybody wins: the land, the environment, and the kids. Now, I can point to numerous examples of poor performance in our management of the school trust lands. There was a 10-year period where no revenue was deposited into the fund from forestry. In other words, the management expenses exceeded the revenue. We spent every dollar we made.
Representative Diedrich, if I can just ask you, your timeline on finishing up your points on 435, is there much left?
Just a minute, yeah.
Representative Diedrich, why don't you finish, then we'll take questions on 435.
Perfect.
Representative Diedrich.
Thank you. So other examples of what I consider poor performance of the fund. In 2008, we passed a law that we said that the DNR must reduce expenses and increase revenues. The next year, management costs rose 125% for the past 5 years. And the administration fees rose by 300% in a 5-year history. So that demonstrates to me that passing legislation doesn't always mean what we think it is going to. In 2007, we allowed the DNR to take 20% of the royalties, no matter what their actual expenses are. We didn't ask them to itemize what kind of money are you spending. We just said 20% or $3 million. Some who have studied the Minnesota School Trust Fund have said, how can you do worse? What is the risk in trying something different? And this is what this bill has done, is it has identified a model that seems to have worked, and I will just say that I think that it would be our duty, fiduciary duty, to at least try a new model.
Representative Diedrich, you've touched a little bit on also House File 206 and 207, in that you see some problems. Why don't you just quickly touch on both of those, how those address some of the issues you've just talked about, and then we can take questions on all three bills.
Okay.
To try and speed this along. Representative Diedrich.
I'll start with the simplest one. House File 206 just nibbles around the edges. I served as the advisory committee chair for the past year, and in December we started the transition, and we realized that that we needed some expertise going forward from the legislature's standpoint, continuing to go forward. there was some institutional knowledge that had been learned in the previous year, and it needs to go forward on the committee. So what we have proposed is that we have two minority members serve on the advisory committee. And then we have also said that somebody who has education finance experience, and as well as hopefully a school trust fund experience, should also be on the committee. We have two members, school board members, I'm sorry, superintendents already on the committee, but they are extremely busy and really actually find it very difficult to get to our meetings during the day, during the week. And don't forget, I'm not proposing that I think this is the perfect solution. It is still a committee that has very difficulty understanding what is going on. And we have heard that even from the chairs of the committees who end up serving on that committee. So how that is it for House File 206. And then I also have House File 207. And this basically prohibits the payment of the mineral management account from the permanent school fund proceeds. Currently, 20% of the revenue is deposited into a mineral management account. Once that account reaches $3 million, the revenue is deposited then into the school trust fund. This bill says that that money should, the management of the mineral leases should be taken out of the general fund, not the permanent school trust fund. And the reason I bring this bill forward is because I believe that there are constitutional concerns. I believe that I know the Minnesota Constitution clearly says that the net proceeds from the forestry costs may be deducted, deposited into the trust fund. However, there is no reference to mining in the Constitution. So I would interpret as the subtraction unconstitutional, or we need a constitutional amendment. There was a 1955 Attorney General opinion that supports that. And then on the university trust fund, trust land, there is another opinion that overturned that, but that is a different topic, the university trust funds. So I have estimated that if we wouldn't have, that would just be more money to the fund, which is generating more interest in revenue and dividends, and then obviously more money to the schools. So I believe that that should be a general fund allocation. And I've introduced that bill before, and at that time I got a fiscal note saying that was $3 million a year, approximately. So those are the three bills, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Diedrich. Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Diedrich. The part about, I believe it was Oregon that had taken this, was Oregon you referenced?
Utah.
Representative Dill, can you maybe just pull your mic closer? I know you talk loud, but it's a little bit of a challenge.
Thank you. Okay. I think you realize that at least the Iron Range delegation is very frustrated with the management of the trust lands and the revenue that ends up with the kids. That being said, it begs the question in Utah, where suddenly did the money come from? It's one thing to say that they enhanced their revenue dramatically. My sense is there's a good chance that there was discovery of oil or gas on that land out there, but I don't know that. Do you know the answer to that question? And congratulate them for what their work is.
Representative Diedrich.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dill, yes, they do have oil and gas on their lands. And I have asked them many times in the many discussions that I have had with them is, okay, we can't maybe make the same performance that you do because we have different land. And they point to several different examples. And that is the whole Boundary Waters canoe area land sale swap, which we haven't talked about. And Ms. Kelleher has actually a little bit of information on that we can talk about. But they also did a land swap sale with the federal government, because when you have an administrator, one person who is solely responsible for advocating on behalf of the beneficiary or the students, you get laser focused, and that is your day-to-day function, is to focus on generating the revenue and preserving the environment when it should be preserved. So the state of Utah has said that land sale swap would never have gone through if they did not have one administrator working on that daily, on a daily basis. We are in the beginning stages of a land sale swap. And I am firmly convinced that unless we go to a single administrator with the board of directors or some level of oversight that way, that land sale swap has the ability to fall through the cracks. And with that point, if I may just ask Ms. Kelleher to briefly give you a little bit of information on why this land sale swap is important.
Ms. Kelleher, welcome, and if you could identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. As Representative Dietrich, or the godmother of the school trust fund lands, referred to you, we've got a really exciting opportunity coming forward, and it's based out of the school trust fund lands that are interlocked in the BWCA. When the Fed made that a park, the legislature retained the rights to land inside the park. Now, counties had land inside the park, and certainly school districts as well as university lands were locked inside the park. Well, the federal forester has done what I think is a very honorable job and worked with the counties to flip their lands out of it for federal land outside of the park. He now has approached the school districts and the university saying before he retires, he would like to complete that trade. We're talking about 80,000 acres for the school districts that are landlocked in there, and 2,000 acres of university trust lands that are locked basically in a place where they can never own a dollar. So this has really been going on for 50 years. People have worked on this issue and going forward. Representative Dietrich, if you stop up in her office, I'll have a map that's much bigger than this that'll show where we were in June, and we've made progress since then. We need to trade about 32,000 acres in land to land. We're about 28,000 we've agreed on, so that's exciting that we're getting close. The feds would trade us the land outside, but since we have so much land inside the park, they'd give us a cash payment. They're estimating about $100 million that would go into the school trust fund land. And as Representative Dietrich has alluded to, having someone to manage this process, not only here in Minnesota, but follow it out in D.C., I believe is integral into how we go forward. And we're just at the precipice of really making this fund work for Minnesota schools in lots of ways. And this is a big one that could make a lot of difference.
Thank you, Ms. Kelleher. Representative Dill, follow up.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I hope that the federal individual that you are referencing is very young. Very young. In fact, at the very beginning of his career, because I've been around this issue for 30 years. And I'm not sure that we have traded a single acre of state land out of there. I could be corrected on that, or whoever owns the land, if it's not the state. But one of the huge problems of the constituency up there, the plurality of constituents, have a major problem with trading the land and cash, because I think that if the Boundary Waters land is some of the most valuable land in the state, and it's been anointed as that by the people because it's almost untouchable. It's just absolutely untouchable. So when you have real estate that's untouchable, it has like an infinite value. And so if we take the land acre for acre, which you're supposed to run value for value, and then you take a cash payment that's not in accordance with our Constitution, because the Constitution says it has to be sold at auction or condemned or traded land for equal value, this creates a huge problem for the people up in my constituency. Now, not all people agree with what I've just said, but a plurality of the people agree that we need to have value for value, not a cash payment, because the money in 100 years is going to be worth very little, but the land in 100 years is going to be worth a huge amount of money. And the federal government has millions of acres of land outside of the Boundary Waters from which to choose to trade from. And that is the rub of what you just described for the plurality of the people in northern Minnesota, is that we don't want the money. We want the land so that we can cut the timber and we could do the mining, because the more acres we have outside the Boundary Waters, the more we have opportunity in the long run to not only create jobs but to earn revenue for the trust. But the people who aren't in that plurality of people in northeastern Minnesota that support value for value trade are the people who don't want us to log and the people that don't want us to mine. And so there sits the reason that I have been working on this for 30 years and made no advancement.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. 2 points. That's why we always, this discussion needs to come back to that the school children own that land in by the inherent duty of a trust is that it needs to generate some level of revenue for the students, the beneficiaries. The legislative auditor's report of 1998 once again cited that 86,000 acres in the Boundary Waters Canoe area will never be able to generate revenue for the children of this state, nor should it. It's a wilderness area. It should stay in its state. So they have said that the DNR has been lax in making that land sale, swap, whatever it might be, happen. And now, just sitting right here, you can see why. Everybody wants to weigh in on it, but we need to keep remembering that the children own that land, and it's in trust. And so then what are the right decisions? We're never going to agree. That's why we need one person who is acting on behalf of the children.
Thank
and
you.
That they can advise us. Secondly, you did ask a question that I did not answer. The state of Utah, when I have talked with them again, they have said, you know what, we might not have the natural gas or the oil, but who knows what we do have in that land swap. And so we need one person making sure to identify every single acre and to look to see, can it generate revenue in the future? The advisory committee actually even does the land sale swaps. There are no guarantees that that land is going to generate revenue in the future. We just have good faith in the DNR. And once again, we have somewhat of an inherent conflict of interest also.
Ms. Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Dill. In the lands bill you started last year that we've seen come back before this committee, there is some language on this sale that would at least allow the land exchanges to happen. And I think that was an indication that this kind of sale is moving forward. You're right and correct. I've talked to Mr. Marks quite a few times, and I don't want to quote him, but he feels there would have to be a condemnation process of the land there in order to transfer it to the federal government. It was never our intent to open that up. The federal government uses an appraisal system that they use across the nation, not just for Minnesota, everyone else. And, you know, I take some faith and a little bit of comfort. You know, I don't know if we ever will get what that land is truly worth. You know, what is a child's good education? What, you know, what price is that worth? It's sort of the same tough question. But at least after 50 years would allow us to generate revenue and assets for the kids that are supposed to be the beneficiaries of this trust. And that's not happening now. We have an opportunity to change that fate with this proposal. And I know your knowledge for business and your head for people and issues, and we need your help to get this done. But this is significant money that could go to kids, not only for the next 10 years, but for the next 100 years. This trust has been around and will stay, and I feel it's probably the only piece children across this state are going to see in increased educational revenues for the next 10 years. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Kelleher and Representative Dietrich. I appreciate your passion, and we'll try and keep it moving ahead. Representative Wagenius.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Dill actually clarified the thing I thought we needed to understand, and that's that Utah does get its great majority of the money from oil, I believe, and very little from forestry.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. The DNR, somebody want to come down? I have a couple of questions. I don't know who. Mr. Kramka?
Mr. Chairman, while
Representative Dietrich.
May I just make one comment?
Go ahead, Representative Dietrich.
There are other states that have more concentration of forestry lands, but their forestry revenue, they get about 30 cents. The whoever manages the forestry lands gets about 30 cents on the dollar. In 2009, the DNR got every dollar. So there are other states managing their lands more efficiently in forestry as well.
Thank you, Representative Dietrich. I'm sorry, Representative Dietrich. Representative Hansen had a question. Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, first a question for you and then for Representative Dietrich. What's the path that these bills go on? I'm looking at 435 and 206, and they're kind of chock full of boards, commissions, nominating committees, advisory committees. Was there a motion at the beginning?
Representative Hansen, they're actually just here for informational purposes because we had discussion about DNR land, and Representative Dietrich, Representative Dill, and Representative Rukavina, whose blood pressure got raised, I'll say, Ms. Kelleher, with some of your comments, I saw him kind of raising his seat over there, have expressed strong interest in this issue, and I think there's a possibility that legislation will come forward, so I thought it was timely to have here. But Representative Dietrich probably knows if some of the parts of her bills were to go forward, I think it's got a long path, potentially, depending on what path or what's all included in the potential bills. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The follow-up is Representative Dietrich, so all of the administration, whether it's in 206, 435, or whatever, that would then be paid for out of the trust, not general taxpayers. It would be self-funded out of the trust proceeds.
Representative Dietrich.
Yes.
Thank you. DNR, Mr. Kramka, and it's amazing, Representative Dietrich, that in my short 9 years here, I've only seen the lawyer come to the table a couple of times, and I think it's almost always been on this issue, so I find that of interest, and I commend you, Representative Dietrich, for working on things that the other side has to bring lawyers with. Sorry, Mr. Kramka, if that's offended you or your associate. If you could identify yourself for the record, and do you have any comments? Specifically, my question is around the Utah model and how it could be used here in the state if and when that would come forward.
Good morning, committee, Mr. Chair, members. Larry Kramka, I'm the new Lands and Minerals Director. And yes, he's an attorney, but today he's just Dan. I'll let you introduce yourself and then.
I'm Dan Rourke with the Lands and Minerals Division of the Minnesota DNR.
Thank you, Mr. Rourke.
And
Mr. Kramka.
And I'm not offended, Mr. Chair, because I'm not an attorney. So let me just answer one question that was brought up earlier in the testimony. These lands are state lands. They were deeded to the state at statehood from the federal government, but they are obviously not like any of the other acquired lands that the department manages through our acquisition programs or other processes. As far as the Utah model goes, I think that there is a very big distinction between the resources that are available in Utah, natural gas, oil, and I believe that there is some other coal resources there that have generated the vast majority of the dollars within that trust fund out there. Dan is with me because Dan's done a lot more work on this. I'm the new kid on the block, as you know, and so I'm going to let him answer any other specific questions about the Utah model.
Thank you, Mr. Kramka. I think some of this centers around the fact that the DNR has managed this land under a mission, I believe, in the statement about managing the school trust goes on about natural resources and for the benefit of that, and that's what we need to deal with. I go back to someone like I, who's a deer hunter, likes the way you've been managing those lands. I'm not sure all the school kids or the folks that want more money for schools necessarily agree. I'm not sure that it's your fault that you're managing the way you are. I think you're trying to do maybe what we tell you, and we do need to get somebody advocating for these lands and clear up legislation or clear up the statute to more solidify to you what we think should happen along the way of these lands. Is there any other discussion on this? Representative Wagenius, we're going to wrap this up shortly. Representative Wagenius.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kramka. Right now, our DNR is in the process of giving money to private parties for hunting lands. It seems to me that not only raises the issue but kind of locks it down, that we should be giving some money for essentially the rental of these school trust lands for the purposes of hunting, because we're not going to stop hunting there, and that's a fine management tool. But just as we are giving private parties money, we should be giving the school trust. We should have probably been doing it all along, but this kind of brings the issue to a head.
Director Kramka, do you care to comment on that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Oguinius, I think that we're trying to execute our responsibility as laid out in the statutes the way that they've been told to us. We try to manage those lands in context to the lands that we own around them. So many of these lands are within the vicinity of state forests that we manage. We try to manage them in accordance with those same principles, you know, of the main forest lands around them. Whether or not, you know, there should be additional monies spent for those other values is certainly something that the legislature should address.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Kramka, do we know the aggregate amount of general fund PILT that's paid on the trust lands?
Director Kramka or Mr. Rourke? You can get it back to us.
Mr. Chair, we'll have to get back.
Okay, that's a good idea. Okay, thank you. I'm sorry, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Kramka, or maybe Representative Diedrich, I don't know who, but you know, I think about this, and I appreciate the way Representative Diedrich frames this out. We need to be looking at the value of this and how we project it ahead for what our Constitution directs it. I wonder, would we be further ahead selling the land to Representative McNamara and other deer hunters who are looking for a place to hunt and would like to own that land, and we wouldn't have those ownership costs or any of the other variables that are there? Has that been discussed, and why do we endeavor on continuing to incur these ongoing costs and the uncertainty that goes with them?
Director Kramka, if I could intercede, Representative Drazkowski, just quickly, Mr. Vadas, who's leaving the state employment over the next month, I've asked him to bring forward a bill that recommends with some land sales specifically dealing with school trust. So I believe yet this session we will have a bill before us with some recommendations from DNR of potential land sales. I got to be honest, their direction centered first around more high-valued property on Lakeshore and less on potential hunting land per se, but I think those are all options available to us. Director Kramka.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, I think that we historically have sold land. Obviously, that has not been a large portion of the holdings that the state has. Early in statehood, there was a lot more of that land that was sold off down in the southern parts of the state where we converted that to cropland. We continue to look at those opportunities. It is an important thing, I think, for the committee to consider that asset is something that has a variable value to it. And when you sell that land, just like selling any other land, you know, cycles with land values around the state, would you have been better off had you sold it all to begin with? Well, I think the inflation on property values would probably tell you no, but that doesn't mean that shouldn't be considered.
Thank you. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure who here could answer it best, but looking at the second page in the handout, which actually has a page number 7 on the bottom, Department of Natural Resources, Division of Forestry, a breakout of some of the certified costs. I'm trying to understand how between 2004 and 2009, forest management costs went from 2.6 to over $6 million, and why the administration costs went up over 400%.
Director Kramka, I'm going to ask you to answer Representative Quam's question the best you can, but if there's more detail that's available to us in writing, this gets to a lot of what Representative Dietrich has brought forward. So I guess we'd like a short answer if you feel appropriate to give us one here, but I also think more detailed answer to that and some of the concern Representative Dietrich's brought forward, because we are going to give serious consideration to getting somebody that's going to advocate for the kids instead of for me, the deer hunter. I'm sorry to kind of paraphrase it that way, and sorry if it offends some of my fellow deer hunters. Director Kramka.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and members, I think that on Thursday last week, the Forestry Division actually had said that they would bring forward some more detailed information on that, and I think that it's appropriate at this point to wait for that.
Okay, thank you. Representative Deal, that'll be the last question, then we're going to, go with Representative Anderson's got a bill that'll be before us. Representative, then we got the DNR, and they're getting way too many high-paid DNR people around here to keep them on hold too long. Representative Deal.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to make a go back. Director Kramp, he said something that kind of flew by there for a moment that I want to make sure that everyone heard.
He did him.
And I'm not sure I can quote him, but he said, had we sold those lands back then, looking at how land appreciation values have happened. That was my exact argument earlier, and that's the reason the people in northeastern Minnesota don't want the money. I mean, the money, you could get money anywhere. You can't get land anywhere. And the last thing is, Mr. Chair, I wonder if the Chair would entertain having anyone that's interested in the audience to comment on this, because if we haven't heard anything, there may be people in the audience that want to comment on this process that we're going through.
Good point, Representative Deal. Comment, Director Kramka? And Representative Quam had a follow-up before. Representative Quam.
I'd also like some idea. Sorry, Mr. Chair. I'd also like an idea on the mineral costs. Thank you.
Okay.
Yep,
did you get that,
Chair? We'll get that information.
Thank you. I know there are some members of the audience, and my comment about the DNR shouldn't centered around how much money. It was more about how important they are. So if that offended anybody in the audience, I apologize. Anybody in the audience that wants to speak for or against? Representative Rukavina, welcome to the committee. I'm glad to see you up early in the morning. And has your blood pressure gone down since you were rising over there in the chair? I saw you making notes on that famous pad in the pocket there of that American-made sport
coat. Once when my dad got upset at Mintec and ended up in the Virginia hospital, his blood pressure was 290 over 190. So mine's not there yet, but it's indicative of what, you know, these pro-aut tempers can flare, but then they kind of tone down. Mr. Chair, members, I've been... I guess on top of the school trust issue since 1987, my first year in the legislature, I offered an amendment dealing with leased lakeshore lots on school trust land. I thought it was an innocent amendment. I was asked to offer it by then Representative Lona Men from Hibbing, and all hell broke loose, and I got threatened by the chairs of both the policy and K-12 Education Committee, and the issue was that there was a commissioner, assistant commissioner at the DNR, who didn't think that the people who had these leases on lakeshore property weren't paying enough, and it actually, I think, went to a court decision. So I kind of started checking into it, and I found out that from 1980 to 1991, when the DNR was so worried whether somebody should be paying $500 on a lease or $550, the DNR sold about $3 to $4 million worth a year of timber sales and never put one penny. In 11 years, not a red cent in the school trust. And so I started doing a lot more research, and Representative Dietrich is on the right track here. I would hope that people would finally start to listen to her about a trustee running the school trust lands. You know, it's not the DNR's fault. They have a lot of different direction and legislation on what to do, but they aren't acting as a real trustee does. Representative Dill brought up a great point. I don't know if you folks know this. The last time I checked, Larry maybe can prove me wrong, or Mr. Myers, but 94% of the money in that $670 million trust and at the University of Minnesota's $70 million permanent university fund came from about 80 to 82% from mineral sales, about 12 to 14% from timber sales, and the rest of it was land we sold, not land we kept. Land we keep has generated money for both the university and the trust. And, you know, Mr. Chair, this whole thing about the school or the lease later lots reared its ugly head again in the mid-1990s when the DNR wanted more for a lease from people who didn't own their land underneath their cabin than me and Representative Dills and other members here who represent lakeshore areas, then people that actually owned their land were paying real estate taxes. And so in about 96, or I think 1997, I had a couple of different amendments on the floor to two different bills, and we finally had a trade. And the DNR insisted on trading lakeshore for lakeshore. I stood up on the House floor and said, fine, you know, that's what the environmental community wanted. That's what a lot of my members, on particularly on my side of the aisle, wanted. They wanted lakeshore for lakeshore. And I said, that's fine. But you tell me how you're going to raise money for the school trust on that lakeshore. And 11 years later, after that trade, or 12 years later, there's, I think, 21 miles of school trust shoreline on Lake Vermilion that has generated either nothing or next to nothing, a couple of leases that our constituents, Representative Dills and mine, had to go through to get to their cabins, generated maybe a few hundred bucks. But what's most egregious about the trustee for our school trust lands is when the Lake Vermilion State Park came up. And I think that a trustee looking out for the school kids would have approached U.S. Steel and said, you know, you own land all over. You own land on Lake Vermilion. That's where we got the land for the new state park. Would you be interested in exchanging 7,000 or 8,000 feet of shoreline, or 7 or 8,000 acres for the 5,000 feet, I think it was, of shoreline, and I don't know how many acres it was? They never approached them. Instead of putting $18 million in the school trust for that little addition to the Sedan Underground Mine State Park, they put $18 million in U.S. Steel's pocket. And I'm sure, had they been approached, you know, they would have probably accepted that. I don't know the answer, but the answer, or the question, is why didn't they do that? And the answer is because they have different priorities at the Department of Natural Resources. Now, if we're going to exchange, all of a sudden, when our constituents and our counties had to exchange lakeshore for lakeshore, and all of a sudden in the boundary waters, where Representative Phil rightly pointed out, you have probably the most valuable lakeshore in the United States of America, and all of a sudden we've changed the rules again. And I see the commissioners here, you know, change the rules again, and we're going to exchange non-riparian lands for riparian lands. Maybe what we should do first, because Representative Dill's right, we'll all be dead and in the grave or in nursing homes. I'm there pretty soon anyway, before this exchange takes place. But maybe what we should do is, and I'm thinking of putting in a bill to do this, is force the DNR to sell that lakeshore on Lake Vermilion, or trade it, and see what kind of a deal actually happens for the school children. Because, members, I've sat on the LCMR for many years, and the DNR comes every single year and asks for money to trade in-holding lands in a state park or in a scientific natural area for private lands in there. And recently, Mr. Vadas has done a good job in trading out most of the lands in state parks. I think most of it's gone. I'd be curious to see what the school kids got for a 40 compared to what somebody, some private landholder in Tetagoosh or whatever, got from the money that the DNR got for those trades. I've asked a number of questions, Mr. Chair, to the DNR and sent it to them, but if we've got all this valuable lakeshore, and there was that trade that was done where I think the 14 forested counties were forced by the DNR bureaucracy to exchange lakeshore for lakeshore, and no money has been generated since that land exchange was approved by the Land Exchange Board, I think in the late 1900s or 1990s or early 2000s, then why are we not starting there so that the legislature can see? Because that's a deal that could get done right away. And I think before, you know, the Lessard Sams group goes out buying way more and more land, perhaps somebody should tell them that there's this valuable land that if we want it preserved for the public in Minnesota, we should start there because it's generating zero for the trust. That's not the job of a trustee. And I could sit here forever if Representative Dietrich is the...
You've been there a long time, Representative.
If she's the godmother of these school trust lands, I'm the padrón. Okay.
Thank you, Representative Rukavina.
I've been on this issue for years, and it's time to get off the dime, Mr. Chair and members, and hire someone that's truly concerned. Because the bottom, last sentence I'm going to say is this. This is a way to raise money for public education in Minnesota without raising 1 cent on the taxpayers of this state.
Representative Rukavina, one comment I did want to make for members and for the public. Oftentimes when the state owns land, they may sell land, say, to a group that wants to have it for hunting. Just FYI to the members, the state, I'm not sure, Representative Rukavina, if it's in statute or it's just policy, they keep the mineral rights. So the reality, if there was ever to be, say, precious metals found under some land that the state sold for hunting, the group maybe that's hunting it would be compensated for their lost time maybe while it was mined, and I don't know how that all works, but the state actually keeps that mining rights and then gets the royalties off that land. And for just to remind folks that Mr. Vadas came forward and talked about potential billions of dollars to the school trust with the precious metals potentially. So not always selling the land has got a lot of value at times. And when we know there's going to be minerals, it probably doesn't make sense to sell it to somebody for hunting or something and then deal with the disruption. Thank you, Representative Rukavina. We appreciate you working with us on this rather complex and tough issue as we try and deal with it. Representative Anderson, you've got a bill that we're just going to discuss for possible inclusion later in a bill for informational purposes, and then we hope to get started with the DNR. Representative Anderson, we have House File 503. If you want to tell us what that's about, and members, it's here before us with the idea that it's something that could be possibly included in a future bill, and that we'll discuss at that time if it does come up, and if there, if it is included, certainly will be an opportunity to discuss and deal with it and vote on it at that time. Representative Anderson, welcome.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. What my bill simply does is exempt a couple of management practices in the DNR from the current statute that if a state worker is available and able to do the work, they will do it. What my bill does is exempt both maintenance services and conservation work from that current state statute. The DNR's own report from this past December indicates that there's a growing gap in funding. And what this does is just give them another tool in their toolbox to utilize some private-public partnerships to get this huge task done. By their report, there currently is a $19 million gap from their funding needs to completing the job fully. That gap could grow as high as $32 million, or in a worst-case scenario under long-range acquisition plans, up to $84 million in a funding gap under current management styles. This is not a mandate. It just gives them the option of contracting with a private entity to do some of the work. I was thinking possibly if a brush cutter, for example, were to be wore out and they didn't have enough funds to replace that in a current year, they could contract with a private individual to do some of that work and to possibly delay a capital purchase for a couple of years. But it's thinking outside the box and trying to allow things to be done differently and in a more efficient way as we maintain our millions of acres that the DNR is charged to take care of. Some figures, 5.6 million acres in natural resource land, school trust land, 2.8 million, wildlife management acres, 1.3 million. The DNR also manages 12 million acres of mineral right land. They maintain our public waters, manage those, the nearly 12,000 lakes, and a figure that surprised me, 69,000 miles of streams and rivers that is managed in this state by the DNR. So it's a huge task. It's a big job. They do as well as they can, but this just gives them another tool in their toolbox.
Representative Vigenius has a question for you.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, Maintaining sound natural resource conservation is a pretty highly skilled. I mean, you talked about brush cutting. That's on one side, probably very low skilled. Mm-hmm. But the maintaining sound natural resource conservation is highly skilled. So I can't see cost savings there. So, but more importantly, if DNR has to go through a process to figure out how you maintain sound resource conservation, it seems to me they're going to, and you ask them to develop something, that they're going to have some rules of the road here, some qualifications, et cetera. And they have to develop that. Do you have a fiscal note on this bill?
No, I do not, Representative.
Are we going to be requesting one for this?
I do not know, Representative Wagenius.
It does seem that that's something that needs to be done, because it, so that's the first thing that I observe, that we need a fiscal note on this. The second thing is when you send something out to be done, particularly this maintaining sound natural resource conservation, we do have to have a process for checking up and auditing to see how that's done. And that process isn't in here. And I would hope you would think about figuring out, as it is now, the department is totally responsible. But if we give it to somebody else, how do we make sure it's been done right? And does that mean hiring people to go up and check on this? I mean, that seems to add a cost to me, not subtract a cost. So a fiscal note should address those questions.
Representative Wagenius and Representative Anderson, I think that's a great idea. And from someone who spent 30 years in the private sector and now 9 years here, I'd love to see that fiscal note and see how it all relates. Because as we go forward, members, and to the audience and to the DNR and to MPCA or whatever, we're hearing from a lot of people about the importance of us trying to streamline government and do things in a better and more efficient way. And sometimes I think government's still caught in the 60s and 70s. While the private sector, those of us at home, at our churches, at our nonprofits, at work, are doing things a little differently. And Representative Anderson, I commend you for being the one that got brought here forward and is bringing up some of these hard and tough discussion points. But I'd rather have them here in a civil manner, and I think that we can find a way that maybe moderates some. And I hope we don't go to where Wisconsin is, but the reality, we need to have some good discussion here about these points. Were you done, Representative Wagenius? Yeah. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Anderson, is this an agency initiative?
No, it is not.
Representative Anderson? Okay. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, I'm trying to kind of think through this. So it appears to me over the last few years we've been outsourcing acquisition of lands. We provide state dollars to nonprofits to purchase lands, and then they donate them to the state, into the state system. And it appears that your bill would be taking that a step further. So we would give the land to the we would give the money to the nonprofits buy it, they donate to the state, and then we would contract with the nonprofits to take care of the land that they donated to the state. Is that right?
Representative Anderson?
Representative Hansen, my vision of this would be that the DNR would still maintain the management rights of these practices and would simply contract out most of the work that would be done to provide the maintenance.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, so I'm contracting out the work, maybe going to the people that the money was given to buy the land, and then they donate it to the state, and then they get a contract to then take care of the land. It seems to be an interesting deal for the nonprofit community that may not be the public interest. It may be more of in the nonprofit's interest. Just a comment.
Representative Anderson.
again, to answer that comment, and it's well taken, but I would assume that there would be some kind of a bid process where these projects would go to the low bidder, for example, and in fact would save the state money.
Thank you. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, thank you. I appreciate your effort to think outside the box here. I know Representative Wagenius raises the issue about some of these things being complicated. I also know, too, that in the district that I represent, the DNR plants food plots for wildlife. And in the past, there have been some farmers in the area that have basically volunteered. They were reimbursed for their expenses and so forth to plant the food plots. My suggestion to people who think this is complicated in this area would be, who knows better how to plant a food plot than a farmer? As opposed to, with all good intentions from the guys who got their boots on the ground, who work for the DNR, coming out and buying relatively new, if not brand new, equipment to plant these food plots, I think the farmers can do a lot better job of that. I also know that there's great frustration with the way that the Canadian thistles and so forth grow on state wildlife management areas next to agricultural land. And I know that there are several farmers who would be more than willing to go in there and help to manage just the Canadian thistles that occur there. So thank you for your effort to think outside the box, and I support you.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, we touched on some things here, perhaps how this could work, but could you expand on what you would envision happening if this bill became law? The brush cutting example is kind of a small one. It can't be your vision for what this bill would accomplish. Could you elaborate on that?
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Representative Hilty. I don't envision that the entire maintenance on 6 million acres is going to be taken over by the private community. This is, again, not a mandate. It's an option. So where it fits, I think we should give them at least the ability to look at it, and if it could save money in areas such as brush cutting or wherever else, thistle mowing, things like that, food plots, at least allow the talk to be on the table and looked at in terms of a cost-saving measure.
Follow up, Representative Hilty? No. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. If we're looking at cost-saving measures for simple tasks like brush cutting, then I think we should hear from the Minnesota or the Conservation Corps of Minnesota and Iowa. They are do the simple tasks. They're reporting to us is better than anybody's I've ever seen in terms of fiscal management. So perhaps when we ask for a fiscal note, we should ask for that to be looked at as another alternative.
I think that's a good point, Representative Wagenius. But Representative Anderson, to Representative Wagenius's point, sometimes some of us look at a crop of thistle and a WMA and think of somebody like you or I going out with a backpack and spraying the thistle. And sometimes that is the appropriate manner, and maybe CC or somebody is the right person. But other times, remember, that thistle control may be with a four-wheeler and a boom. Or other times, actually, on a large WMA, you could have a high flotation vehicle with 60, 80-foot boom, and they economically can do that kind of work very efficiently and very sensibly, especially maybe right after a burn. And the timing may be that it needs to be sprayed on a Sunday, maybe the only day it's been calm for a couple of weeks. And maybe you need to call on Saturday night to get a hold of that worker that's available to do that. And my experience oftentimes is some of the times the innovation and the profit motivation of small business people and their ability to bid competitively in situations like that make the most sense. So Representative Anderson, you know, some of us may think of brush cutting and the CC with a with a handsaw, and other may think of a 12-foot wide tractor mower doing it as a first path through before a certified pesticide applicator's got to come through and spray Garlon or whatever it is. Some of this stuff has gotten very sophisticated, much more efficient to do with the right equipment. And like Representative Fabian, I get nervous when I see tractors, specialty trucks and such owned by groups like Pheasants Forever and Minnesota DNR and such. I don't know that that's the people that we want to manage this stuff if that's where we're going to. And Representative Anderson, I think you're on the right track. And in my experience in the what I often call the real world leads me to believe that we need to move the discussion forward here. And I understand that this is tough for some folks. We do have at least one person in the audience that wants to speak. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I too noticed all the DNR staff here and just was wondering if there was a comment from the agency on this.
Does somebody from the DNR want to comment? Commissioner, thank you. And then after the commissioner, we do have at least one person in the audience. I believe it's Mr. Anderson, but it could be Ms. Anderson. Mr., I'm sorry, the first name doesn't give it away. Commissioner.
Chairman McNamara.
Welcome.
Members of the committee, my name is Tom Landwehr. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. Just a couple of comments I would make on this. The department does employ an extremely well-qualified group of individuals to manage state lands and manage state resources, and we believe they are the best people to do the work, much of which is very technical. We do, as you've already noted, use a number of seasonal employees. Some of them are CCM, Conservation Corps of Minnesota folks. So we do already contract some work out. But much of the work of the department is very, very high-skilled work. People come in with degrees, master's, bachelor's, and PhDs to do this work. So there is a high degree of expertise that's needed, and we believe that the employees of the Department of Natural Resources are really the best ones to do that.
Commissioner, if I could have a follow-up to that, do some of the current work rules that your agency has to abide by impede the movement of talented people at different times of the year, being able to move from one division to another to be able to complete a task that they may be the best one suited for? If you could answer for the record. You're nodding, but I wasn't able to hear it.
Chairman McNamara, members of the committee, of course, I've been on the job 6 weeks now, so I may not be familiar with the specific examples that you're
I wasn't
citing.
Looking for a specific example. It was a very broad question. If there are work rules that impede your ability to have people with good talents not be able to move from one division to another, because current work rules don't allow them to do that task where they may be talented and able to do, especially with taking into the seasonal nature of, say, forestry or state parks or fisheries or whatever it may be.
To that point, Chairman McNamara, members of the committee, I'm not aware of work rules that prohibit people from going from one division to the other. What the rules that may be problematic are essentially with overtime. Much of the work of the department obviously occurs from May to September, the field season, and during that period of time our employee ranks swell from 2,700, which is our full-time complement, to about 4,000 as we hire seasonal people to work in parks and do the land work and so on. So a number of we had a significant amount of capacity at that time of year, but there's nothing that says that an employee in the Division of Forestry, for instance, cannot work in the Division of Fish and Wildlife to do management on state lands. I think the reality is that they're busy doing forestry stuff, so it's more of a scheduling thing. Everybody wants bodies on the ground during the same 4 or 5 months, and it just is that there's not surplus capacity in any division.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Commissioner Landwehr. I sense here, members, that we're running into the resistance from government. We have here a very common sense proposal that would give our government more flexibility, not only in terms of time and resources in dealing with some of these management needs that have to happen, but it seems we're hearing that you know, the only entity that's equipped to do this work is the state government. Now, we've got a piece of DNR land in Wabasha County that that's managed by the Department of Forestry, and it's in a wetland area, and they have attempted to establish tree plantations in there four different times, and they failed and replanted every single time. For us to go forward with the empty notion that the only person or people that can properly manage property in this state is a government worker is completely wrong. Representative Anderson, thank you for bringing this bill forward. These are the types of innovative approaches we have to go forward with, and it's going to be difficult for the bureaucracy. We acknowledge that, and we're seeing that. But if we, these are the types of things we need to be doing, and I just congratulate you on bringing the bill forward.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Commissioner, I understand, you know, you're probably still learning, but are you saying that you do not ever foresee needing this option, or you have no desire to seek this option?
Commissioner Landwehr.
Representative Falk, members of the committee, again, the staff that we have, the department, the full-time equivalent staff of the department, are really the talented people that we need in the agency. And at the present time, I don't, you know, with it in an era of declining budgets, especially declining general fund budgets, and I hear about that shortly, we're not looking to add work. We're looking to continue to do the work that we are with fewer staff.
Representative Quam. Mr. Chair, Mr. Commissioner, I would say that the testimony I've heard so far this year is that you are desiring to add work because you're desiring to add land, and that I would think it'd be prudent to have options in a managerial role that you may need if something unforeseen happens, or there are other instances you may not be able to foresee now, since you're fairly new to the post, and once again, you would reject having an option that might help you with something unforeseen in the future?
Commissioner Landwehr.
Representative Falk, members of the committee, again, the staff that we currently employ really are quite skilled and qualified and necessary for much of the work that we're doing. I think to look at an example that was cited earlier, can anybody spray weeds? Well, surely anybody can spray weeds, but you have to understand that much of the land that the department manages is not just grass. It's very very diverse landscapes which don't respond well to herbicides. If you're out spraying thistles and you accidentally kill a western prairie fringed orchid, you are going to be getting into, you know, some real problems. And so I think the point is, yes, anybody can spray weeds. Yes, perhaps anybody can cut brush. But you know what? You still need to have really qualified people directing where that work gets done. And that is the full-time equivalent staff we have.
Commissioner Landwehr, I want to make sure that the way you said that wasn't to construe that those good folks in the private sector that need to be able to identify the important species not to spray when they're spraying in industries like I came from, in the landscape industry, where we have certified pesticide applicators attend meetings not only from the DNR but from MnDOT employees, from all folks in the industry, the landscape maintenance, the landscape prairie restoration work, also know how to identify what to spray and what not to spray. I think that just philosophically, some of us believe that as this area of work grows, should it be all done by the public sector in that method, or should we look at an opportunity to work together in a way that may include the private sector more? And I think that's, we're hopeful that you're open to that. I expect you to advocate. I know you spent a long history at the agency and with nonprofits and interest groups, but we want to work with you. I think there's some of us that think you you need more flexible work rules going forward, and we're going to give more and more examples of where we think that's true, and I hope that you're willing to work with us on that rather than us end up in an adversarial role. And I do expect you to advocate for the good, hardworking employees at the DNR, but I don't want you to buy an 80-foot boom on a high-flotation tractor for spraying thistle on large bass prairie land, even though you would be capable and able to do it with a backpack or even a four-wheeler sprayer, maybe a new Ford tractor that you own. It may not be the best and most efficient way, and maybe if there's money to be saved, that money could be used somewhere else within the state budget. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Chairman. excuse me, Commissioner Landwehr. It's my understanding that the state, the DNR, owns about 1 million acres more, according to the legislative auditor's report, than they can handle at this point. Is that correct?
Commissioner Landwehr.
Representative Fabian, members of the committee, I think there are various interpretations on how that report could be construed. It's sort of like saying the state has more miles of road than it can take care of, because we always have a backlog of road projects. The state owns, as you heard earlier, much trust fund land, much of which is managed not by DNR employees going out and cutting trees, but by the forest industry cutting trees that DNR marks. And so I think there's a number of ways that you have to look at that information to really pick out the meat of that. I don't believe for a minute that there's 1 million acres of state land that are not being appropriately managed.
Representative Fabian, follow up?
Not at this time, thank you.
Okay. Well, and Commissioner, again, where some people may say a land's not being managed properly, a WMA that maybe has brome grass and some cottonwoods on it is very valuable for wildlife habitat. It may not be as valuable as if it had prairie restored and the cottonwoods cut down, but it's a matter of, is the glass half full or half empty? Follow up, Representative Fabian.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Landwehr, I just would encourage you to keep an open mind on this. That's my point in all of this discussion. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hancock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I don't know if I can elaborate a little more on what the Chair has said, but it seems to me you were talking of, and if I get the numbers wrong, please correct me, 2,700 full-time equivalent, and then when it gets to the really working season, that expands to 4,000. It would seem to me that this would be an area where we could incorporate the private sector into that picture. I ran a small auto repair center and tire store, and there were times that we would farm out exhaust work simply because we didn't want to get the pipe benders and various things to do. And I think when it comes to these areas, or even when it comes to areas, for example, like aquatic invasive species, I think we need to recognize that there is an abundance of competent knowledge and workforce out there, independent of the DNR, that we need to incorporate into helping us solve some of these problems. And I would encourage us to involve the community in our decision making on how we tackle these problems and actually do the work of making it. And I think that certainly the expertise of the DNR is respected and appreciated, but also we want the DNR to want us to be a part of the solution as its citizenry. And keep that in mind, if you would. Thank you.
Any comment, Commissioner?
Thank you, Chairman McNamara, Representative Hancock. Just that I also want to make sure people understand that we do use a lot of outside expertise. You know, and I can think of at least four examples off the top of my head. Conservation Corps of Minnesota is one we use a lot. We've got groups like Ducks Unlimited doing the very unique engineering on water control structures in the state. We do use farmer cooperators on a lot of wildlife management area food plots. You know, most food plots that are out there are done on a crop share basis, so an adjacent landowner is actually taking two-thirds of that crop while they leave a third. And as I mentioned earlier, most of the forest management that's done in the state is really done by harvest, by timber harvest, which is to be done by independent contract loggers. So we are, in fact, using a diverse workforce now. It's not just all falling on state employees. It's just that we need expertise to make sure that the right things are being done in the right places at the right times.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Lyndon Anderson, if you could come down, and then this will be the public testimony. If there's anybody else in the public that wants to speak for or against the bill, if they want to identify themselves. Mr. Anderson, if you can identify yourself for the record, that would be, and then give us a minute or two of testimony, that'd be great. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name's Lyndon Anderson. I do work for the Department of Natural Resources. I'm on seasonal layoff. I'm one of the seasonal folks that the commissioner was talking about. My working title is Park Ranger. I work at Lake Louise State Park and Forestville State Park as my primary duty station. One of the committee members had asked about problems in moving across division lines. I can think of three instances last year where we worked for wildlife doing prairie burns, where we worked for forestry doing a pretty major burn. We have in the contract, the AFSCME contract, what's called the Whitewater Watershed Agreement that allows and encourages state employees to move from one division to another in order for them to get a little more work time, seasonal work folks, and also to broaden their horizons and to do some of this other work. We do use a lot of public partnerships. Lake Louise State Park last year putting in a new entrance sign. We're using the local contractors to dig the hole. We use the local contractors for bringing in the concrete. Of course, you know, we could mix our own, but that would be silly. I think if you would look at the local groups, Prairie Visions, the Friends of Lake Louise, the Friends of Forestville, which are the ones that I can speak to, we have a very good rapport with them and use lots of outside help in lots of ways. Some of the things that we do, though, I think we do really well as state employees, our primary concern when we're doing these things is sustainability. If we're cutting a new trail, we cut 2 miles of trail at Forestville State Park to make a brand new cross-country ski and horseback riding loop last year. Took three of us 2 days to cut 2 miles of trail. It'll take us about a week to get it rocked next year. The only cost beyond our salary will be for the rock. The equipment is all there in the parks that we. You talk about tractors. We use tractors a lot. We aren't necessarily farmers in the sense. I'm a farmer at home. I live on a family farm. I've been there 130 years. But we use that equipment for lots of different purposes, between mowing, spreading rock, cleaning up the places where the horse campers put the horse waste. I'm not sure that a private contractor could have done the trail that we did and rocked it in less time, cheaper than we did. Hay Creek recreation area a couple years ago had a new trail put in by a contractor. It is, contracts are used on occasion. We went back in after they were done and spent 2 weeks cleaning it up, making it usable. I didn't see the contract that was let. I don't know whether they had completed the contract as specified or not. I just know that we had to go back in, the crew that we had, okay, to take care of it.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Questions? Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Anderson, for coming down and testifying today. I'm just curious, you said you're on seasonal layoff, and I'm just wondering what that means exactly. Are you still paid? Do you still receive benefits throughout the months that you're not employed, or how does that work?
Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee member. Seasonal layoff means I work generally a pretty well set season during the year. My season happens to be from, oh, say the end of March until the end of November, the 1st of December every year. When I'm on seasonal layoff, I get unemployment, but the other benefits don't accrue. I don't. Most of the folks that are seasonal folks do not get enough time in to qualify for insurance plans, so they aren't covered that way. If you do get enough time in, and I believe the time every year that you have to work is equivalent to 90%, or I'm sorry, 9 months full time, whatever, however many hours that works out to, then you are qualified for the full health insurance. And after you've worked for the department for 3 years, then when you're on layoff, you will continue to receive your insurance, and the state pays for it for that first 3 years. Then the employee pays for the insurance. There is a lower level if you work full time for half of the year, 1,044 hours. You are eligible for partial insurance benefits, and you pay the partial insurance benefits year round, whether you're on layoff or not, if you're taking those that insurance. Does that answer your question?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Anderson, thank you for the work you do for the people of Minnesota. You mentioned that you work with a burn crew, and with prairie restorations, there's a lot of burn needs, and as we look at more restorations, there's probably more burning. And I'm wondering about the capacity and the liability questions of volunteers doing burning or contracting burning and versus the DNR doing burning. There's a fairly narrow window out there that moves with the spring and the fall. Just how do you handle that, or what's your experience? Do you have to supervise the volunteers if they come in and burn, or what's the capacity out there for burn crews?
Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen. When we are doing burning in the spring, prescribed burning, there is a burn plan that has to be written ahead of time that limits the weather conditions, that tells you how many you're going through a formula that tells you how many people you have to do an effective burn. And if any of these conditions are outside of what is supposed to be happening, the burn shut down. We also go through training every year, reminding us of the proper procedures for burning and when to just simply call it off and not take chances. There are lots of opportunities for burns to get away. We see that, seems like, every year. So we do manage the volunteers that do come out to help us. They aren't put in positions where they have much responsibility, because the responsibility does fall back to those of us who are in charge or trained to do it.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Thank you, Representative Anderson. Commissioner, if you and the Deputy Commissioner, or Assistant Commissioner, Deputy Commissioner, excuse me, Deputy Commissioner Shad, who's ever going to do this, start the presentation. We're done. Thank you. Because we do have, I know specifically, Commissioner, I appreciate you being here, and would like you, I know you wanted to do, members, this is the beginning of our budget overview by the DNR, and Commissioner, I want to welcome you for being here, and if you want to make some opening remarks, we're really not, members, going to get into the actual budget overview, but seeing how you both were willing to come here and sit through a lot of our meeting when we were hopefully getting to you earlier, but Mr. Meyer and I did have a conversation that we thought it would be a challenge if we actually got you on today or not, and it always makes me nervous with, I know, the busy schedule you do and the obligations pulling you in all your directions. Thank you. It was good discussion to have about the previous issue, and members, we're just going to begin the overview. The books are here, or they're not actually, or we do have the books. Our budget books are, I see a few have them, and Representative Hilty, I don't see mine, but we're going to get by without it today right now, but Commissioner, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it's a pleasure to be here today. I very much appreciate your taking the time to look over this budget. It is a very long and complicated budget, and it will take several days. I appreciate your energy and time in getting that done. I just want to make a few brief comments to open the discussion on the budget, and I'm going to turn it over to Deputy Director Shad. The DNR budget, as many of you will see for the first time, is a very complicated budget. It has a number of different funds and different revenue streams and expenditures. When we put the budget together, much of that predated my tenure here, but the department was operating under several principles. At least three of these principles were one, to recognize that the department has a big role in developing economies around the state. As we've already heard around school trust fund lands, the state administers state mineral leases, the state administers forestry lands, the state administers lands on which much tourism is based, hunting, fishing, outdoors recreation activities. So we have an important role in the economy of the state. We want to look at ways to integrate our work better and internally, to make sure that we are looking at new funding streams, new ways of funding the department's budget to reduce our reliance on general funds if we can. But most importantly, we also want to maintain the critical functions of the department. These are the state's assets. These are your assets the department is managing, and we take this responsibility very seriously and want to do the best job possible. The governor's budget that you'll see before you has several changes in funding, including a hunting and fishing heritage initiative. This is a restructuring of our hunting and fishing licenses, not just an increase as you may have seen in the past. We have a large initiative for addressing aquatic invasive species. This will require new funds to ramp up to the level that both our stakeholders and the legislature is demanding. We need to take on aquatic invasive species much more aggressively than we have in the past. We have a change in our water management fund that will provide for better use of managing public waters, especially for recreational purposes. We have an initiative in the governor's budget for wildlife health. I'm sure everybody in this committee is aware of the chronic wasting disease problem we have in southeast Minnesota. While we're still wrapping up the bovine tuberculosis issue in northwest Minnesota, and who knows what will be next. We have a change request in for some of the dedicated funding through the Parks and Trails Fund and the Clean Water Fund to better use those revenue sources to address the critical needs identified for those programs. And finally, we have a general fund reduction. We took up the governor's challenge to present you with a budget that is a 10% general fund reduction, and we have done that in this budget by $5.9 million. The department is only about 82% general fund right now. We have about 18% general fund. We are about 82% dedicated funds through license fees and similar sources. We recognize that our contribution is going to be small from a dollar standpoint, but it's we're going to make the same contribution that the governor is asking other state agencies to do. Finally, in closing, and I'll turn it over to Deputy Director Shad, we recognize that there are a lot of changes going on. There are changes in the state's financial situation that demand that we look at new ways of doing business, and we are committed to doing that. I think you'll see that the budget addresses some of those new issues, things like aquatic invasive species and reduced general fund revenues, and we're looking at how we can respond to those changes, present you with a reasonable budget that provides us the resources necessary to live up to our obligations. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, at this point I'd like to turn the presentation over to Deputy Director Dave Shad.
Deputy Commissioner, before you go forward, Commissioner, we had put in a request to your agency in a letter that I sent to you that asked for information about your organizational chart, your full-time equivalents, new hires recently, number of vehicles and such. And unfortunately, again, the folks in the legislature and the folks in the governor's office aren't on the same page about getting this information to us. Commissioner, I implore on you to please get us the information so we can make good decisions about things that center around some of the discussion we had earlier with you, and I appreciate where you are coming from. But if we don't know what kind of equipment you own and what you're trying to do with that equipment and the people you're hiring and the seasonal employees and all that, if we have good information, we're going to have good discussion about the two sides of different issues, and it's going to be a lot easier for us to work on this on these issues going forward. But we need to know why you have one more assistant commissioner now than the previous administration. Where else have you added people? Are you doing things recently, members? On Friday, I was part of a group, seven of us that rode up to Hibbing to Cliff Mines to view a mine, and it was seven of us, five legislators and a couple of staff people. We actually use an enterprise rent-a-car. Was $73 to rent a car for seven of us to ride in it, and I'd say the fuel was probably $50 or something. But I guess I'd be curious, do you use things like that? That seemed innovative to me, instead of having, because I started putting a pencil to it in my mind, and knowing that I spent my career in the landscape business, I'm sorry, but it's a tough to make ends meet on what would be we traveled about 400 miles on $73 for that vehicle. So maybe Enterprise is good at what they're doing. I'm assuming they are. They continue to be in business. But I'm wondering if that's a thought. Are we getting out of the vehicle business and getting more in the DNR business? And I look forward to answers like that. And truthfully, I've had discussions with Mr. Meyer, and he says, you know, Denny, we're on top of that. We're being real smart in the vehicle. And I got to be honest, when I left, I believe it was the round table, I happened to leave at the same time that then director, now assistant commissioner Carroll, jumped in the back of a hybrid car, if I'm not mistaken, and there was multiple people in the car. So, you know, that hybrid running back up to Park Rapids or wherever it was going with three DNR people may have been the right way to go. But, Commissioner, we need this information, or we're going to be making decisions with lack of information, and I don't know that that's the right thing. We need to know if you're mowing the grass at different spots. And I got to be honest, why are you mowing the grass if we can be contracting it out for a lot less? Is it because we have in statute that if we have state employees able and willing to do that work, we're going to continue to do that? Or is it because you're the least expensive route to go on that? And should the person that's a seasonal employee capable of being on a burn, licensed and trained to do that, be pushing a lawnmower? I don't know that, but I know that today people, generally speaking, specialize. There's not many businesses as large as the Minnesota DNR that continue to mow their own grass or empty their own garbage cans. I know, Commissioner, in your building, you don't empty your own garbage cans because you don't own that building. Unfortunately, I believe that building's owned by owners now that live in a different country, some of them. But they do pick up the garbage in our building. And you know what? We have three garbage cans in our office. They only empty one of them because the current work rules tell them that's the way it is. I'm sorry, I might as well empty all three cans because 90% of my garbage is in the can that they don't empty. So, Commissioner, you run a great agency, and we want to make it even better working together. The reality is we got to get through a really tough time, and so please, please, give us the information we need to make these decisions in a positive manner. And members and Deputy Commissioner, I apologize, but I want to give the minority a chance, as I just went on and on with only a couple minutes left in committee, if someone on this side would like to speak to my desire for information. But first, Commissioner.
If I could just respond to your initial question, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that the governor's office has said that there's certain financial information, obviously the stuff in the budget that's available, and did not want us to be duplicating that information in individual requests from the legislature. But some of the things that you're talking about, Representative McNamara, are not things that would typically be found in the budget, and we would be delighted to provide that information.
Commissioner, you're a good man, and I appreciate you saying that. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and folks from the DNR. I think it'd also be interesting to see, you know, how many trucks we're buying for nonprofits, and what's the dissolution of those trucks, let's say, after their purchase life. If we give money to Nature Conservancy to buy a truck and then after 5 years they sell it, what happens to that truck? What happens to leasing for if we're going to give money to Pheasants Forever to lease trucks? I think that type of information is also helpful in this overall discussion because I think we already are providing money to the nonprofits and to private entities to see just what happens with that and if it is more efficient or if it's another asset that's being privatized.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. And Representative Drazkowski, I think Representative Hansen just alluded to why we should consider the private sector in this, and then we don't need to worry about what they do with the truck when they're done. We have a contract with them. They get the work done, and they move on to different things that might be working for somebody different, and we don't need to worry about that. So whereas Representative Hansen makes a good point, and a very valid one. We don't want people buying trucks on temporary contracts, and I know we had instances where they leased them instead, which is much more appropriate specifically, and I believe Representative Hansen, it may have been concerns that you brought up. Commissioner, I apologize. Thank you. I appreciate you being here. Deputy Commissioner, I assume you'll be the one that'll be here tomorrow, or Mr. Meyer. One more point, members. Mr. Meyer, so that we have, there's a handout you have that looks like this. Members, I'm going to need you to do a little homework, or unfortunately, over the next couple weeks, we're going to be here in the evenings. I have no intention tomorrow night or Thursday night being here in the evening, pretty much no matter what. But there's some important things, and Mr. Meyer, I'd like to be able to go through this quickly. This is background of the agency members. What we need to concentrate is on the change items, the items that are looked at as what's going to be done different or funded differently going forward. This is background information. Some may be more familiar than others, but please take it on your liberty to bring this home, bring it back tomorrow. The books, members, if you're a space cadet like me, we're better to be leaving these books in the room here. I believe they're now spread throughout our offices for many of us. If you're responsible, like Representative Hansen, Representative Fabian, Representative Hilty, you brought them with you back and forth. If you forget things like I do, we're probably better to leave them here in the committee unless you're going to take them home at night for that given night. Anything else? Members,
Chairman.
Representative Drazkowski, real quick, then Mr. Meyer. Representative Drazkowski.
Mr. Chair, just real quickly, thank you. Wondering, our previous discussion on the school trust lands, I'm wondering if there was discussion about the accruing of value in land over time versus has anybody put together a table of what the value of that land is over time compared to what it could those dollars could earn in through the State Board of Investment? A table like that, I think, would be very helpful.
Representative Drazkowski, that's a good point. And Director Kramka is up there, and I see making notes right now. Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. My intention with this document is to spend about a half hour, 45 minutes, helping you understand what the current DNR budget does at a higher level, so when the change items that we do have, we go through those, you have a better understanding of how they fit within the budget process. Our change item presentation doesn't touch on a lot of the day-to-day activities that are currently within the DNR's budget. So my intention is to walk through this at not a really fast pace, but rather quickly at a high level, and then go into our change item presentations and spend some time talking about our license fee proposal and the AIS proposal and the rest of the change items that we have. We should be able to get all of that done before the end of Thursday's meeting.
Representative Hansen.
I move the minutes.
Oh, thank you, Representative, and I appreciate it. Representative Hansen moves the minutes. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Meeting's adjourned. Thanks.